Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. It is Monday morning in New York City. We are just days away from Christmas. Things are heating up in the NFL. We got a lot to talk about. Good weekend?
Excellent weekend. Thank you, Jen.
Yourself, see? Good weekend?
Very good.
I love it. All right. Well, let's talk about a couple things coming up in the next 3 hours. The Eagles pulled off a big upset over the Rams. Nick Foles in for the injured Carson Wentz, just like last year. All right, here we go. A little more than 11 minutes left in the third quarter. Tied at 13. Foles to Alshon Jeffrey for the 50-yard gain. That put the Eagles on the 9-yard line. Next play, Wendell Smallwood, he gets in the end zone. One of his two touchdowns on the night. Eagles take the 7-point lead. Rams would keep fighting. Fast forward, last play of the game, Eagles blitz. Jared Goff gets the pass off. It was too high. Time runs out. That is your game. Rams lose to Nick Foles and the Eagles. 30-23 was your final somehow, some way. Eagles keep their playoff hopes alive. Here's the man of the hour, Nick Foles, after the game.
You hate for your teammate to get hurt. I've said before, you know, I feel really bad for Carson. I mean, we're tied in that QB room. But then when you don't really know what's going to happen. You start taking reps. It's been a while. You go through the human emotions. I don't care what you've done in the past or what I've done in the past. It doesn't matter when you step on that field. It's a new day. So it was really just dealing with the emotions, prepping as hard as I could, and then realizing I'm not alone. I have great teammates out there. All I have to do is spread the ball around, lean on them, stay in the moment, and we were able to do that tonight. It's a huge win for us.
If there is a higher football power, perhaps this is how they want the Eagles scripts to go now. Carson Wentz, you take us wherever you take us, and Nick Foles will climb right back into the driver's seat at the end of the season. How were Foles and the Eagles able to upset the Rams?
Yeah, I'm not going to overreact to Nick Foles being the quarterback because it was definitely a team effort. That secondary looked like they went through a transformation compared to the secondary that we've seen. Now, the one thing he did, he targeted more receivers down the field, throwing the ball down the field compared to the way that they had been orchestrating their offense. And he was supported by Doug Peterson, this offense. They decided to run the ball, even though they weren't great at running it. So the combination of the offensive line, giving them the protection, and not being one-sided as far as backing him up to throw the ball 30, 45 times a game. No, they supported him by running the football, getting in good down and distance, and him and Alshon Jeffries, I don't know where he's been the last half of the season.
It's amazing.
Like, so seeing him emerge, if he plays like that, anybody could almost be the quarterback of the Eagles. So he had the type of support not only from the outside wide receivers but from that defense in Fletcher Cox. So impressive win by the Eagles last night in the Coliseum.
It does just look like for some reason or another that Carson Wentz's favorite target has always been Zach Ertz, and they run one style of offense. And Nick Foles, now again, we can't disregard the first two games of the season where Nick Foles wasn't great. The first few games he played when he took over for Carson Wentz last year, but this looked like the style of offense they were playing in those two great games where he was chucking it deep to Alshon Jeffrey, and Jeffrey's coming down with it. That one play we just showed in the highlight, there's two guys there. He underthrows them both. Either one seemingly could have caught it. Alshon was targeted 8 times. He had 8 catches for 160 yards. I don't even know that he was the one targeted there, and he comes up with a 50-yard catch.
Very, very fortunate.
Yeah, right, absolutely. That's the and so, but the other part of this is you mentioned the Eagles' secondary. The Eagles' their pass rush looked to me the best it has looked all season. The secondary, without question, played the best it has all season. They had a game, to me, a game-changing play when they got a rush on Jared Goff. He panicked a little bit. It was third and one. He had a bobbled snap, miscommunication, and instead of just eating it, tried to make a play. It ended up being here it is. You can see it. An interception nearly returned for a touchdown. The Eagles end up scoring the touchdown that basically ices the game there. All of this Eagles team, not just the quarterback, look totally different than it has all season long. And people need to understand the magnitude of this upset. They were 13.5-point dogs. That's the same. The Cardinals were 13.5-point dogs when they upset Aaron Rodgers and the Packers and got Mike McCarthy fired. Like, the two touchdown underdogs don't typically win in the NFL. I think it's the third time they've won all year. And this keeps Philly's season really alive for a wild card spot.
Does it change the way you see this Eagles team, though? Do you suddenly have maybe a little more faith in them that they could perhaps do something in this final playoff push?
No. I don't think so, because I don't think their secondary will be able to hold up. They did a great job against Todd Gurley and Jared Goff in this offense, but are they going to run the ball as much as they did in this game? Because they've forgotten about the running game thus far. So I just have to go on what teams have done. They're not going to be able to change my opinion based on one game. They're going to have to be able to support Nick Foles, to be able to give them a chance to win, and that goes through being able to run the football and that defense. Can they be as relentless as they were against the Rams? That's the question in these last couple games.
I don't think the secondary can duplicate what they did, but if their defensive line and pass rush can duplicate that type of pressure, it takes a lot of pressure off their secondary. And I thought Michael Bennett was in the backfield all night. Fletcher Cox made some huge plays, got dinged, came back, made some more huge plays. Haloti Ngata, I heard his name called more in this game than I feel like in the last four Eagles games combined. So all of a sudden, what was the strength of their team last year, the pass rush, showed up big time last night.
And it didn't help the Rams at all that Jared Goff had arguably his worst game of the season.
Well, I mean, it was following up a dreadful game against the Bears. But the problem for Goff now is, in the first 11 games of the year, he threw six picks. In the last three games, he's thrown seven. And you saw some of the look on Sean McVay's face, like, what's happening to my beloved offense? The guys that were running wide open early in the year, weren't running wide open yesterday. Mm-hmm. Goff missed, I think it was the tight end Everett, in the end zone on an easy touchdown late in the game when they were trying to come back. The Rams' offense, most notably Goff, looks very different this month than it had the previous three.
Yeah, their offense, they missed Cooper Kupp. They missed those short throws. They missed those third down throws to be able to move the chains. He's a change of pace. And he's also one of the wide receivers who gets great yards after the catch. So they haven't adapted since he's been injured. And people are starting to figure out the offense. Where's Todd Gurley? I think Todd Gurley's not 100% healthy, even though he's not saying anything. Didn't look healthy to me last night. But because if Todd Gurley's healthy, he's got to touch the ball 20 times. He didn't do that last night.
All right, time now for Put a Grade On It, sponsored by CarMax. Nick Foles finished 24 for 31, 270 yards, no touchdowns, and a pick. Nick Wright put a grade on Nick Foles' day yesterday.
B+. The only reason I'm not giving an A is the one pick he threw was a critical spot. They were up 17. They didn't need to force it there. They could have really iced the game with any points in that situation. He threw a bad pick in the red zone. But aside from that, he gave the offense some juice. Once again, he was ready for the call, and he kept the Eagles' season alive. For that reason, I give him a B+.
Yeah, I believe in that. And also the offensive line, the play calling, all those things help support him. Nick Foles needs some type of support. B, I think, is the accurate grade for him.
All right, good stuff. Got to take a break. Coming up, talk some Cowboys. What went so wrong for Dak Prescott and this Dallas team? That's next on First Things First. Coming up on New Year's Eve, the Red Box Bowl kicks off between Oregon and Michigan State at 2:30 Eastern on Fox. Then flip over to FS1 as number 17 Utah battles number 22 Northwestern in the San Diego County Credit Union Holiday Bowl at 6:30 Eastern, or catch it all on the Fox Sports app. It is now time for us to go viral on First Things First. Mitch Trubisky and the Bears took down the Packers 24-17 yesterday to clinch the NFC North crown, and it should have come as no surprise if you saw Trubisky's pregame outfit with the quarterback rocking the Bears holiday light-up sweater. It's lit, literally. But this is postgame, so my question to you is, does Does he wear this if they lose?
Well, I don't know if you have an alternative wardrobe. Oh. We've seen Cam obviously only has one outfit, win or lose.
And it's no clothes.
And so, but I like this. I like the ugly sweater festivities. It's kind of in the Christmas spirit.
Judging from your face, I bet you're not so gung-ho.
Well, I'm not in wearing anything ugly. Like, if you know it's ugly, then why put it on your body? But that's another story. I don't think he had another outfit. You could see with his travel bag coming in, that looks like it's it. Typically, when they go to the hotel, they have one outfit, then they come to the stadium. But he's worn a number of themed outfit, Coach Ditka, and a number of other ones throughout the regular season. So, good job for him.
I like that one. I like it. You can light up on the sweater, a little Christmas lights.
Something. Time for stories to start your morning.
He's lit in there. That came from her and her
staff.
Yeah.
Snap
and nine. That was Deontay.
Yeah.
Deontay put
it in. We know he's a member of your staff.
We were trying not to have him on the show.
Sponsored by Gillette Clear Gel. On Saturday, Deshaun Watson and the Texans picked up their 10th win of the season, beating the Jets. DeAndre Hopkins went off. 10 catches, 170 yards, 2 touchdowns. All right, Nick, how impressive were the Texans on Saturday?
I didn't think overall they were that impressive. I thought they got out of there with a win that they needed to have with the Colts surging. They couldn't run the ball. Deshaun Watson was their best rusher. The defense, I thought, had some busts aside from J.J. Watt playing another monster game. He's been excellent this year. But Nuke was spectacular. Their quarterback was spectacular, and that was enough to get away with one in the Meadowlands.
Yeah, not too much different than they've won 10 out of the last 11 games. Not too much different. Not stellar performances in winning those games, but defense was good enough to keep them in the game. Question going forward, what happened to Lamar Miller? He was injured in this game. Will that hinder? Because without a running game, they're very, very limited offensively.
All right, let's move on to the Ravens now. They beat the Bucs in a rainy, messy game where, once again, Lamar Jackson was the story. Lamar passed for 131 yards, added another 95 on the ground. So the Ravens are now 4-1 since Lamar Jackson took over for Joe Flacco, the only loss in overtime at Kansas City. See, what'd you make of Lamar's performance yesterday?
It's hard to make a living like this. You won't be living too long if you do, and you won't be making much of a living. I wish that they would have more of a passing game. I know this is not sustainable. Thank goodness they're playing Tampa Bay, good enough to win, but it's hard to win this way. Ugly football, but that's the only choice they have with Lamar.
They had an amazing piece of fortune with the schedule when they went to Lamar. They played 5 straight games, literally, against the 5 worst statistical defenses in football. That ended against Tampa. Next week, they have the Chargers, and we'll see what the offense that is so limited passing can do there. But they are banking on Lamar growing as a passer in the offseason. So the report this weekend that Joe Flacco is either going to be cut or traded this offseason. This is Lamar Jackson's team moving forward.
Yeah, he throws like Michael Jackson.
On to Sunday Night Football, where Jared Goff struggled once again. Over the past 2 weeks, Goff has thrown 6 interceptions. For comparison, the first 12 games of the season, he threw just 7. Oh, and the Rams fell to Nick Foles and the Eagles last night. See, what's going on with Jared Goff?
Defenses are starting to get used to him. They're giving him some different looks. They haven't been able to get a really good running attack. And when he has that running attack, he's great at the play action. And also, I believe he misses Cooper Kupp in the slot since he injured his knee. That offense has been different. But the NFL, they got about a year and a half book on him, and they need to make Sean McVay, remember the young genius, they need to make some adjustments to be able to help out their young quarterback.
And remember, my concern with Goff coming into this year was he was near the bottom of the league last year, even though he had such a great statistical season, in anything deep, anything 20-plus yards down the field. He hasn't, to me, really buttoned up that part of his game. And now that you're talking about defense getting a book on him, what I'm also seeing is they're getting a better pass rush these last few weeks. He's not handling that well. He needs to get back to being close to what he was at the beginning of the year, because this Rams defense is not as good as we thought it was going to be headed into the season.
All right, let's end on the Patriots. Tom Brady threw a crucial interception in the red zone to Joe Hayden, who made just a terrific catch. At the time of the interception, the Pats were only down 4 points. After the game, Brady said, quote, "I was trying to flick it out of bounds. I didn't." See, we rarely see Brady make mistakes like that. How concerning was that crucial red zone interception?
Well, he had no choice, because they've called him for grounding in the pocket an awful lot. If you had Tom Brady, what are some of the mistakes he's made in big, big games? He will ground the ball. If you get close to him in the pocket, he will throw the ball to an area on the field, and they call grounding. They've even done that in the Super Bowl against him. This one, he couldn't because the yard marker, and there was no receiver by the yard marker. He couldn't throw it to the distance that was closer. This was the only spot on the field where he had receivers. He was trying to get it out, but he didn't want to step into the throw because they were around his legs, and he couldn't get enough on it. Exactly what he said in the press conference happened. So he was trying to get rid of it, wasn't able to get enough on the throw. Joe Hayden was able to intercept it.
I think it's important the audience understand the distinction here. This was, we see some quarterbacks, most notably young quarterbacks, make this a throw that looks similar to this, trying to make a play. Throw across their body, throw it up in the air, trying to make a...
Not a smart play.
Right. Brady was trying to throw it out of bounds.
Yeah. He wasn't throwing it across his body. He was throwing to the right.
No.
We see is guys who try to run younger, and then they can't get enough on the throw because it's across their body.
Agreed. I understand this wasn't across his body. This was across the field. My point was we typically see guys do this trying to make a play. Brady was trying to get out of bounds, didn't have the muscle on it. So I while this was a critical play in the game, I don't think it was a mental error as much as a physical error. What we're not used to seeing from Brady is mental errors. That's what he talked about at the end of the half last week, saying he thought they had a timeout when they didn't. To me, this was a physical error. But it does speak to an overall bigger issue, which is Brady has simply been a slightly above average quarterback this year. Like by all statistical standards,
yeah.
I mean, we can look at it up and down the list. Aside from total yards passing, he's outside of the top 10. He's somewhere between 10 and 15 in everything. The Patriots see gave Brady, we thought, a contract bump this offseason, $5 million in what they call likely to be reached incentives. If he's top five in any of these categories. Right now, he wouldn't reach any of those incentives. He's outside of the top 10 in completion percentage, yards per attempt, passer rating. And so that, to me, is the bigger picture concerning thing, is what he is, after having such an excellent year last year and the year before, 28 touchdowns, two picks, in a year he was suspended the first four games. He hasn't been the same guy this season.
But are you concerned that that average, above average play, whatever it is, spills over to the team? Are you concerned that the team, as a result, has been playing sort of a little less than
they don't have enough talent to be able to overcome Tom Brady? But the reason why his numbers are like that is because of the talent. They've had 33 receivers in their rotation since the spring. Remember the receiver, Philip Dorsett, they traded for last year? He's been absent in action. Also, the big plays from the wide receiver, because Gronk is a shell of himself. Yes. He can't run. So all these things, we're talking about Brady, but all these things lead to Tom Brady and an offensive line that was not great at protecting him. So all those things lead to Tom's numbers being what they are.
And the Patriots have not been able to win this year, forget on the road, when they don't have a great running game. In games where they've had 100-plus yards, they've done it seven times, they're 7-0. And so those are Brady's numbers beneath it, but that top line is their team record. They're 2-5 when they don't have at least 100 yards rushing, and Brady's numbers are worse, but not demonstrably, not so much worse. It is they don't have enough punch in the passing game. It's not only they miss Gronk because he's not the same guy. I feel like they miss Brandon Cooks a lot. I know that they like the value they got on that. They traded a first round for him. They got a better first round back for him. They got a year out of him, but they could use Brandon Cooks right now. They could use a real legitimate deep threat right now.
But even if they don't have the big plays and the big players, the penalties you saw yesterday was so uncharacteristic. Whether you play well or not, that's not what you usually see from a very well-coached, very disciplined Patriots team. I'm not saying it falls on the coach, but what do you make of that?
Well, we give the coach credit, so why don't we give the coach some blame?
So was it Belichick's fault?
Well, if the team has penalties, when they don't have penalties, we say, oh, it's Belichick's fault. We never give the players credit in New England. So you got to be able to spread it around.
Okay.
Like, so now they have a bunch of penalties. Oh, the players weren't focused. No, they were focused, but this is what happens. When you have players that are moving at a speed quicker than you, you can't anticipate them. So a lot is you got to credit the Pittsburgh Steelers. The number one thing is you got to credit the crowd and the atmosphere in Pittsburgh, because that led to a lot of these false starts before the play. And that also, the energy. T.J. Watt talked about it. The atmosphere was spectacular. Pittsburgh Steelers were ready. New England was a half step slow from the snap of the ball.
The crowd obviously gets a ton of credit for the false starts, but the most critical penalty, the one when they had first and goal or second and goal around the 5-yard line, they get a holding penalty, that was a Pittsburgh Steeler D lineman beat his guy, I think it was Shaq Mason, and Shaq Mason held. A couple of those critical holding penalties, you're talking about giving the players credit or the coach credit on New England, the Pittsburgh Steelers D linemen were beating the New England Patriots offensive linemen, and they were holding as a last resort. And the refs the last few weeks have been calling holding at a higher rate than earlier in the season. Nobody's getting away with it right now. Bit New England yesterday.
All right, let's move on to the Dallas Cowboys now. They took their 5-game win streak on the road to face the Colts, and Colts running back Marlon Mack had a day. Rushed for a career-high 139 yards and 2 touchdowns. Dak and the Cowboys' offense had a rough one, couldn't get anything going, like literally bagels. Dallas shut out for the first time since 2003, back when Bill Parcells was the coach. Colts win 23-0. Here's what Dak Prescott had to say after the game.
We can't win like that. Hurting ourselves, simple as that. Playing behind the chains, penalties, sacks, whatever it may be, incompletions. We just hurt ourselves from the beginning all the way to the end, and we never really gave ourselves a chance.
All right, Dak said it pretty well, but CeCe, what did the loss to the Colts say about this Cowboys team?
To me, it doesn't really send a message, because if you look at where they've been the last 5 weeks, if you said, okay, in the 6 weeks span, they were going to go 5-1, they're going to lose one of those games, it's been like, okay. All right. So a lot of times people overreact because it's one loss, but it's just one loss. And I just believe that the energy they had, Nick pointed out last week, he thought that this would be a game that they could be flat. I didn't think they could be flat because it's a very, very young team. So it was a team that was a little bit flat on energy, but it's also a Colts team through their head coach who were very, very prepared. Frank Wright, his last few years, he's been in Philadelphia. Philadelphia plays Cowboys twice a year. And for me, this was like a game that they had a lot of information of what the Cowboys and their personnel, and I thought Frank Wright did a great job getting this Colts team prepared. We talked about before the game, people would be shocked about how physical the Colts were. Offensively, with them running the football, and with their defense. Both of those things played out. That defensive performance was just as good as the one Dallas put on New Orleans several weeks ago that really caught the national attention. So great performance by the Colts, out physical in the Dallas Cowboys.
And people are going to focus on the 0 points scored, obviously, and I'll get to that in a second. But what the Colts offense was able to do against the Cowboys defense, as far as luck, was not sacked once. He was only hit 3 times the entire game. Marlon Mack rushed for 134 yards. Like, the Colts front really dominated the Cowboys front in this game in a way that you see this, the Colts win a blowout fashion, you think, oh, luck must have lit him up. Luck was fine. Luck made a few really big plays on third down, but it was more that luck was upright the whole game and they couldn't stop Marlon Mack. I was worried about the Cowboys win. Thanksgiving Day, super amped for that game, followed by the next week, their Thursday night football against the Saints, followed by a game that could essentially wrap up the division for them, all at home, all on either national TV or the big window on Fox. Now they're on the road. It's a noon or a 1 p.m. start, noon in Indy. All those things, a desperate Colts team working against them. But see, you brought up something before the show, which is you thought this game could have gone differently if the opening couple possessions go a little bit differently. The Cowboys have a field goal blocked. Colts then drive down for a touchdown. Then it's only 7-0. We're in the first quarter, and the Cowboys have a fourth and, I'll call it, 1.5 at the 3 or 4 yard line, and they go for it. You felt differently about that than the going for it in overtime, fourth and a yard, where if you don't go for it there, you potentially will never get the ball back.
Yeah, I respect the NFL coaches being more aggressive this year, but you have to play each game out totally different. They had driven the ball over 10 plays that first drive, field goal block. Driven 10 plays again. This was not like a half inch. This was a yard and a half. This was substantial bill to get. I kicked the field goal because it's the right football play to make. Make the game 7-3. You still have some type of momentum. You get this big stop on fourth down. Then the Colts were able to take that momentum, and the Cowboys were never able to capitalize off of that. So to me, you can't always go for it and just say, hey, regardless of the feel of the game, I'm going to go for it. No, sometime you need to go do the right football play and settle and get those 3 points so that you have the momentum that offense had created in those first two drives with over 20 plays, no points to show for it.
I just think it's critical to understand that if you are someone that says you should go for it on every fourth down, or someone that says anytime you go for it on fourth down, unless you're trailing in the fourth quarter, there are no absolutes right. in this. And the feel of the game is definitely an important part of it. And the situation of, if I were right, that the team was potentially going to be a little flat, how deflating will it be if you have one long drive down the field? You get no points because a field goal gets blocked. You have another long drive down the field. You get no points because you get stuffed. Like, could that one play flip the game against you, as opposed to kicking the field goal isn't going to win you the game, but it also isn't going to flip the game against you. So, well, I typically do like going for it when you're within, you know, right near the goal line, because you set the other team up in such bad position, even
these
if you don't get it.
These coaches have no rhyme or reason. You cannot go into these games saying, I'm going to go for it regardless. You have to get a feel for your team and a feel for the game, because momentum is at stake. All these situations, you can't, every time I'm in the red zone, I'm going to go for it. Well, that's right. idiotic. And that's not the best. Dallas in a one-back set going against their front in a goal line stand, that wasn't a good play to run.
Right.
So there are obvious situations where the coaches should go for the points compared to everyone just being ultra-aggressive all the time.
Before we break, we have to talk about what the Colts are doing, because they've been playing some really good ball lately.
1-5 to now they're sitting there at 8-6, as alive as you can be. The aberration of the year, it almost looks like, is a couple weeks ago getting shut out by the Jacksonville Jaguars. But since losing to the Jags 6-0, they beat a red-hot Texans team who you mentioned, C, had won 9 in a row up to that point, was trying to clinch the division. And now they beat a red-hot Cowboys team in dominating fashion. The Colts right now are still on the outside looking into the playoffs. They need some help. They need Baltimore to trip up. They need to keep winning. But what is definitive is Andrew Luck is back. They have built this team totally differently than in the past. That Quentin Nelson kid is awesome, but he's not the only awesome offensive lineman. And Darius Leonard, their rookie second-round pick, who leads the NFL, not rookies, leads the NFL in tackles, has another 7 sacks go along with it. He has added a level of physicality to the defense that it didn't seem like the Cowboys were able to handle yesterday, as Dak was under constant assault yesterday.
Yeah, there were 10 100-yard rushers in week number 15. And the Colts got an understanding that, man, they were 8-2, those 100-yard rushers. They got a physicality to them that they never have had with Andrew Luck or with Peyton Manning. Yeah. So how they built this team is totally different. They still need another draft, another free agency year, and then this team right here is ready for prime time. It's great to see Andrew Luck back and for them to dominate with them without him having one of those Hall of Fame performances.
Exactly.
So good news in Indy.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, talk some Bears. Can Khalil Mack carry the Chicago team to the Super Bowl next on First Things First? Back here on a Monday morning, First Things First, with Super Bowl champ Chris Caney on the program.
Rocking
Chris,
the hardware today.
Hey,
Super Bowl champion.
It's
hardware.
Winning time, Nick. It's
that,
winning time.
How do you decide whether
you wear it or
not?
This is when the teams that are trying to make a move, this is when they start
does
playing really
at the
good
end
football.
Of the year.
So, I mean, this is really what it's all about, right?
There you go.
I'm just saying.
Mr. Caney.
Back in 2011, our playoffs started in week 16.
Oh, that's right.
I'm just saying, we had to win the last two to win the division and get in. Just saying.
Just saying.
Just saying. Putting
right.
it out there.
Just mentioning it.
Putting that right
I
out
thought
there.
You was bringing in a punch, Nick, in his face.
Well, why would he do that?
He's
my guy.
All right, let's
talk about.
If I
hit him in the nose, it could be fatal.
Oh, that's Chris's
show. The big showdown in the NFC North, Packers-Bears. We
emergency.
Are going to pick this one up in the fourth
quarter. Get some tissues, because he's going to have an issue.
Tie game. Mitch Trubisky hitting Trey Burton for a touchdown. That puts the Bears up 21-14. Fast forward 3 minutes left in the fourth. Aaron Rodgers driving the pack down the field. However, Rodgers picked off by Eddie Jackson to seal the game. Rodgers' first interception in a record 402 consecutive pass attempts. Green Bay officially eliminated from the playoffs, while the Bears pick up their first division title since 2010. Bears have won 7 of their last 8 games. It's momentum. Chris Caney, what do you think? Can this Bears team make a Super Bowl run with the style of football that they play?
No, they can't make a Super Bowl run, because ultimately any team in the NFC is going to have to go through the Superdome and play the New Orleans Saints. And I don't think that Mitch Trubisky is up for that challenge. I mean, as much as I love the Bears defense, their opportunity to get after the quarterback, their ability to be able to turn the football over, at some point, you're going to have a quarterback that can win from the pocket and be able to push the ball down the field. And right now, Mitch Trubisky trusts his legs more than he trusts his arm. If you go back and look at the tape from yesterday's game, there were some throws that he missed outside the numbers versus man-to-man coverage that quality quarterbacks just don't miss. And so while I think Matt Nagy understands the limitations of his quarterback, when you're playing against a team like the New Orleans Saints, you're going to have a quarterback that's capable of not just being a passenger, but a difference maker and being able to give that team opportunities for big plays in the passing game. Mitch Trubisky ain't there right now, CC. That's why I don't trust the Bears.
I totally disagree with you, Canny. I think that, first of all, I think you're being unfair to Mitch Trubisky. And I don't think it's just about him, but
the tape don't lie, Nick. The tape don't lie.
I watched that entire game yesterday. Okay. He absolutely missed a few throws. He also made some enormous plays. He also, I think, was 20 of 28, 280 yards, two touchdowns, no picks. And unlike when the Bears played the Packers to open the season, you had Matt Nagy trust Mitch Trubisky late in the game when they had a lead, and it's what allowed them to hold on to the lead. We've had Mitch Trubisky about one in every three games plays a great game. About one in every three games plays a terrible game, and the other ones are average. Like, he's had a 6-touchdown game this season. He's had a couple 3-touchdown games this season. So I don't think he can go on a run where he has 3 consecutive great playoff games, but I know he can play 1 great playoff game, and I know this defense is going to show up every single week. This is the best defense in the NFL. And if they're not contenders, then we only have like 2 contenders. Like, in my eyes, if you are the Saints the favorite in the NFC, yes. But if you're going to tell me who's the team most likely to go to the Superdome and beat them, it's the Bears. Like, if the Bears aren't contenders, then there are no contenders in the NFC in my eyes. Like, to me, the Bears are right now neck and neck with the Rams, a Rams team they annihilated last week. And either of those teams would have to go to the Superdome if they're going to get through, assuming the Saints win their first playoff game. So I think they are absolutely contenders.
Our viewing audience not going to be surprised. I don't agree with you as far as being all the way over there. And I don't agree with you as far as being all the way over to where your position. Mitch Trubisky is always should be part of the conversation if you're talking about the Bears. Now, you're talking about the Super Bowl. You're talking about being a title contender. So the quarterback is one of the huge question marks. Now, to me, he hasn't done anything to me that would prove, like what you're saying. Like, I understand, because when you have one-on-one, the defense is jamming the box, and they're inviting you. And in those throws, he was not very good. Now, there are 2 or 3 throws that you see why he was the high draft pick that he was. He's got a tremendous arm, and he's more athletic than people realize if you have not watched the Bears. But to think that he can win a playoff game, like, that right there would be the question mark as we go. Even if they can win their division, they could win the first round of the playoffs. But as you go on, it's always going to be. If we're questioning Jared Goff, why wouldn't we be questioning Mitch Trubisky?
Oh, I think everyone's questioning him. But
Then
I'm not going to do is X him out. Canny's Xing him out.
I understand. That's why I'm not as far. That's why I'm somewhere in the middle. Now, as far as championship caliber football, I'm concerned. I'm concerned about Trubisky. I'm concerned about him turning the football over. I'm concerned about them being one-dimensional. Now, the Saints, I don't believe that the Saints are the powerhouse that they were last year offensive. You look at their lack of big plays, pass plays over 20 yards. If you limit Michael Thomas, what do they have? Alvin Kamara has not had the runs over 20 yards he had last year. Their running game is not near. Now, we haven't broken it down that way, but that's what I'm just saying. This Saints team, even though they do have the best record, to me, they're not as good offensively as they were last year. They're missing their left tackle, so the Bears can take advantage of that. So I'm somewhere in the middle, but Mitch Trubisky has got a lot to be able to prove to me before I can make them Super Bowl contenders.
But, Chris Canny, other one-dimensional teams have won the Super Bowl and made playoff runs. Other teams that have a fantastic defense and a very, very slight offense have made Super Bowl runs. You're just worried about Mitch Trubisky, or are you worried that this defense isn't as good as we seem to think it is?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, it's mostly about Mitch Trubisky. I think the defense is as advertised, but it's mostly about the quarterback. I mean, even if you want to look at the Philadelphia Eagles from a year ago, I mean, it's only so far that RPOs and checkdowns can take you. But Nick Foles, in those playoff games, the NFC Championship game and the Super Bowl, pushed the ball down the field.
Down I don't the field see and Mitch, third down.
And third down. I don't see Mitch Trubisky being able to consistently do that. And then you couple that with the fact that football changes, and you usually, when this time of year, when the intensity ratchets up, you see players revert to who they really are. Mitch Trubisky has had issues with turnovers. Coming into this game yesterday, the prior two games, he had 5 turnovers.
Absolutely.
He was fortunate enough that that strip sack wasn't recovered by the Green Bay Packers yesterday in the third quarter. So, I mean, that was a play that could have changed the game. So, when I look at Mitch Trubisky, I don't have a whole lot of confidence in terms of him being able to provide the level of quarterback play that it takes to win a championship.
And in the Rams game, he was awful in the Rams game. Like, to your point, he was terrible. Like, Goff had 4 picks. Trubisky had 3 himself. So he will put out there some terrible games. But he also, again, he's played 14 games this year. 5 of them, he's been outstanding. And so there are some teams in the league right now, the Chiefs are one of them, that if their quarterback plays poorly, they are drawing dead. They have no chance to win the football game. The Bears, to me, are almost the opposite. If their quarterback plays well, they are the best team in the league. If Mitch Trubisky plays a B-plus game or better.
Make sure we get a sound bite of that, because I think that's going to be that's not going to be lost.
Hold on. Do you disagree with that, C? That if Mitch Trubisky plays.
I'm not going to agree with that.
Okay. All right. If Mitch Trubisky plays well, because they have, without question, the best defense in football. They have a good running game with Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen. The only question mark about them is their quarterback.
Listen, this is not a Baltimore Ravens. This is not the Monster of the Midway. Okay, just slow down. When you have a defense that's good, all right, and this is a good defense, this is not a great defense, you can have a bad day. All right, so in your Mitch Trubisky, you said, Mitch is good. Mitch is average, and Mitch is that's the three games he's gonna have to play in the playoffs.
Right.
In that average game, he could lose that game. Two of the three scenarios, he could lose created.
Of course. And he also, as was shown last week against the Rams, can be awful against a great team and the defense.
Well, the Rams are not a great team. Okay.
Well, then there's no great team. That's where we're at then. There's no great team. And if the Bears defense, I agree with you, it's not the Monsters of the Midway, but it's the best defense in 2018. It's the best defense this season, so they don't have to go beat the Monsters in the Midway or the Ray Lewis Ravens. They've got to beat these teams. And if the Rams are just a good team, then we're running out of good teams. Like, so that's where I'm at
with
the Bears.
Well, a good team does not lose to Mitch Trubisky and to Nick Foles, okay? In back-to-back weeks.
Sure, that's why.
Now, there are teams out there with a good record. Now, will they be able to make it in this year of the NFL? And what kind of playoff ball are we going to see? Are we going to see like we saw the first 8 to 10 games of the regular season? Or are we going to see the knockdown, drag-out NFL that we've been seeing the last 3 weeks in the NFL?
All right, let's break there. Coming up, Chris, stick around. Nick Foles, speaking of which, and the Eagles may have pulled off the upset of the season. We'll talk about that next on First Things First. Chris Kennedy talking Eagles and Rams. Nick Foles in for the injured Carson Wentz, just like last year. A little more than 11 minutes left in the third quarter. We're tied at 13. Foles to Alshon Jeffrey. Where's he been? 50-yard gain puts the Eagles on the 9-yard line. Next play, this is Wendell Smallwood. This is Wendell Smallwood getting into the end zone. One of his 2 touchdowns on the day. Eagles take the 7-point lead. Rams would keep fighting, though. Last play of the game, Eagles blitz. Jared Goff gets the pass off, but it was too high. Time runs out on Goff and the Rams. That is the ball game. Rams lose to Nick Foles and the Eagles. 30-23 is your final. Somehow, some way, Eagles keep their playoff hopes alive. Here's the man of the hour, Nick Foles, after the game.
You hate for your teammate to get hurt. I've said before, you know, I feel really bad for Carson. I mean, we're tied in that QB room. But then when you don't really know what's going to happen. You start taking reps. It's been a while. You go through the human emotions. I don't care what you've done in the past or what I've done in the past. It doesn't matter when you step on that field. It's a new day. So it was really just dealing with the emotions, prepping as hard as I could, and then realizing I'm not alone. I have great teammates out there. All I have to do is spread the ball around, lean on them, stay in the moment, and we were able to do that tonight. It's a huge win for us.
All right, Chris Kennedy, let's break this down a little. How did the Eagles do it? How did they pull off an upset without their quarterback on the road against this Rams team?
A couple of things. Number one, I thought that Sean McVay got away from his running game and Todd Gurley. Now, I know he had the knee injury in that game, but, I mean, just 12 rush attempts from Todd Gurley.
Does Todd Gurley look the same to you? Because to me, and I also take in consideration the lack of attempts. Sometimes when you have a star player like that, the team knows he's hurt, so they don't give him the ball And do you think that
the
might
second
because
second straight week? See, to your point, remember first. Because
I just think he looks
touches.
Totally different than the Todd Gurley that we've seen.
And you know what, Sean McVay might be trying to spell him a little bit, knowing that this is about the playoffs and knowing that they're trying to preserve him and make sure that he's at his best when we get to the postseason. But I mean, the formula for the Rams' success ain't Jared Goff dropping back 55 times. Ooh. Like that ain't gonna get it done. So I think you couple that with the fact that their defensive line didn't get any sacks yesterday.
No,
like no sacks. Like, for as great as Aaron Donald is, I mean, somebody that deserves MVP consideration, you would think that those edge pass rushers would have a little bit more productivity. Dante Fowler Jr., Ebukam, like, we need to put them on milk cartons. They were missing yesterday. So, I mean, that's why Nick Foles was able to have the success that he did. And you look at what those guys on the back end did. There was a little bit of guessing, like that jump ball that he threw up to Alshon Jeffrey or Nelson Aguilar.
Right.
I'm not sure who Nick Foles was throwing the ball to, but you saw that those guys were guessing back there. They weren't playing fundamentally sound. So I look at this team and I say, when you get away from your running game offensively, which is your identity, and then you couple that with those guys not being able to put pressure on the passer, that spells that's a recipe for disaster for the Rams. And so I think that's why the Eagles were able to take the trip West Coast and be able to pull the upset.
The 11-2 Rams, because that's where they were before this game, and what we saw for them, very, very explosive offense through the first 15 weeks of the season, getting around 30 points a game. So the defense, that you know that we got 30 points, so we don't even have to play the run. I knew that this lack of a run defense going to come back to haunt you, because in the NFL, regardless, if teams can see that they can take advantage of that, they will run the football to take advantage of you. Now you open yourself up for the play action. Aaron Donald, I don't believe, should be in the MVP conversation, because getting all those sacks, you running past a lot of running backs, and you can't be on that type of poor defense. No defensive MVP has been on the defense as poor against the run as them. So that's one of the signs of you as a defensive tackle. You're supposed to stop the run. So if you're going to be in the MVP conversation, let me see how many tackles for losses that you have that aren't on the quarterback. So I thought that would be a hole that ultimately would come back to get them. Since Cooper Kupp's been lost, his offense has been different. One surprising thing about it was I was surprised that the Coliseum on a Sunday night, there was many Eagles fans there. Man, it was an uproar when the Eagles made any type of play. And the reason why I'm going to bring that, because when you got 11 wins, you in Los Angeles, you in the Coliseum, people should be coming to see that type of product. Mm-hmm. And we have known that people aren't in love with football in Los Angeles, and I was able to see that in this game. I know people might not be all talk about some things on the field. Well, that to me led to the Eagles being able to, the momentum they had, being able to play to their fan base. It led to them, the Rams, not being able to mount some type of comeback, and they're the number two seed. I'm worried about that. I'm worried about a team coming out there in the wild card round or the divisional round having no home field advantage. That, to me, would be a problem.
To your point on home field advantage, I wish I remembered who it was, but one of the beat writers covering the team tweeted during the game that during the Green Bay home game, the Kansas City home game, and now the Philly home game for the Rams, they all felt to the writer like they were at a Super Bowl, because it felt like it was about 50-50 as far as crowd support. That does not speak well for whatever team comes into that building in whatever round. I understand wanting to spell Todd Gurley. I get it. But this was a wildly important football game for them. You just spent the last segment accurately talking about how difficult it is to go into New Orleans and win. New Orleans hadn't played yet this week. Mm-hmm. New Orleans got two left against Carolina, one left against Pittsburgh. They could still lose one or two games. The Rams, had they won last night, as 13.5-point favorites, they're potentially in position tomorrow morning to be the one seed.
Absolutely.
And have it not go through the Superdome. So I think it is this, the Rams team, their passing game the last 3 weeks has been leaking oil. Jared Goff, the last 3 weeks, has looked the shakiest he's looked since Sean McVay has taken over. Not surprisingly, the last 2 weeks, the first back-to-back losses of the entire Sean McVay era, which is pretty damn impressive because he took over a bad team, and now it's been 31 games. They haven't lost back-to-back. But holistically, for the Rams, what we're seeing is That Cooper Kupp injury, you mentioned it earlier, C, seems to have been bigger than we gave it credit for. Mm-hmm. Because, Josh Reynolds came in and he played well, but whatever it was, whether it's almost
they don't have a pure slot receiver. Josh Reynolds is not a slot receiver. They played Woods in the slot, but now they don't have that designated go-to friendly because, they're not going to force the ball to their tight end. So now they become a little one-dimensional in obvious passing situations.
Kenny, how much of it is that Gurley and Goff aren't playing the way we've seen them play early in the season, and how much of it is that defense are starting to figure out what this offense and what Sean McVay's planned for them?
Well, what they want to do is not complicated. I mean, they're almost an exclusive 11 personnel team, so that means three wide receivers, one running back, one tight end, and Jared Goff operates under center more so than any quarterback in the National Football League. So their offense is built on being able to hand the ball off, and then when they have an effective ground game, being able to utilize play action and throw the ball over the middle. But what teams are doing is on early downs and distances, they are dropping an extra defender down in the box. We saw the Chicago Bears do that last Sunday night, and then that makes, when you limit the effectiveness of the run game, that takes away the play action over the middle, the easy throws for your quarterback. So right now, teams are daring Jared Goff to beat him, and I don't feel like Jared Goff has done a great job of that the last few weeks. So, I mean, that's the biggest thing when I look at this Rams team. And, Nick, you're right. I thought that was a huge loss for them because you think about it now, the Chicago Bears are just one game back.
With the tiebreaker.
The one game back with the tiebreaker from being able to get that second seed. So, I mean, the Rams still got some work to do for the rest of the regular season over these next couple of weeks.
And they're fortunate that over the rest of the season what they have is the two divisional opponents that are two bad teams. They are at Arizona and then home for the Niners, even though the Niners are playing better lately. Like, they should be able to go 2-0 down the stretch. But one thing we're seeing with Goff is, so he went 1 in the draft. Wentz went 2 a few years ago. Wentz is, even post-injury, very comfortable with rushers around him. Keeps his eyes upfield, looks for guys, will shake guys off. Goff does not seem nearly as comfortable with people at his feet, with people under when the pocket is collapsing. And all of a sudden, the last few weeks, against the Bears pass rush and an invigorated Eagles pass rush, he's been skittish is the perfect word, and he's played the two worst games that he's played since his rookie season.
All right, let's take a break. Chris, we'll see you a little bit later on in the show. Coming up, are we starting to see the end of the Patriots' dominance? We'll talk about that next on First Things First. On Sunday, it is a great slate of NFL action highlighted by the Buccaneers facing off against Ezekiel Elliott and those Cowboys. Or it's Khalil Mack and the Bears taking on the Niners. It is all on Fox and the Fox Sports app. You can check your local listings for the game in your area. We'll get to Tom Brady and the Pats in just a second, but first, a couple highlights from Saturday Night Football. Texans and Jets and DeAndre Hopkins. The back shoulder grab late in the fourth quarter, C.
I'm glad he's finally starting to get the attention that he deserves. Huge game in Jersey on Saturday night. Not a great offensive performance, but he made all the big plays at the end. Him and J.J. Watt stood out in this game and their quarterback.
J.J. Watt and Andrew Luck going to come down to the wire for comeback player of the year. Nuke has been spectacular.
Seahawks and 49ers, Doug Baldwin, speaking of spectacular, snagging the ball, avoids the hit for the 35-yard touchdown.
Seahawks are a totally different offense with Doug Baldwin. We saw without him last week their struggles. This week, two nice touchdowns. That's why he has one of the better sets of hands in the NFL.
It looked like they were going to win this game in overtime. An enormous holding penalty took away what was a huge play in the beginning of overtime. They ended up having to punt. The Niners get a second straight great home win.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter, Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.